Hey everyone, and welcome to BPX After Dark, Daytime Extra. Broadcast live at Radish Digital, that's digital with a J. A show that breaks down special events, projects, dates, and silos within the BlockPax ecosystem. Now without further delay, let's get to this broadcast of BPX After Dark, Daytime Extra. Hey everybody, this is Discord user Slappy White with Radish Digital, that's digital with a Jay, and coming to you in BPX After Dark Daytime Extra. Excited to have Rommel and Kisher here too. I can't ask for anybody who has more expertise in the Wonders world, obviously. Let's see. Today we're going to be talking about, specifically on the Wonders, we're going to be talking about the character trait boxes on OpenSea. So that is what we're going to be focusing on there. Excited for that. I must confess, when I read those boxes, I'm not exactly sure how to read them. And after the Wonders team worked so hard on this collection, I want to give it the proper respect by fully understanding what they've already developed and presented to the community. And this is on me, is that I'm looking for a cheat way. They've put the information out there, but I'm just grateful that they've come here to talk about it. Now, I will say, Kisher and Rommel, is that this is one of those cases. I will say, when you don't know something, sometimes it's, we all remember that kid in class who wouldn't let go of something and everybody in the class understood it. And you're like, dude, let it go. Like, we all know what it is. And so there's sometimes where I'm not embarrassed to ask stupid questions that I don't know, but I also don't want to be the kid like holding everybody up. And so I recently reached out to someone and I said, hey, I don't really understand this. Like, why do some character proofs have 9 boxes? Why do some have 8? Why does this say, it doesn't seem like, it does, I don't understand this. And I asked, do you understand it? And the person's like, no, actually I don't. And then I asked another person and they're like, kinda, not really. And I was like, okay, so I'm not the only one. And for all I know, you know, it's like the circle I run in is just like, we're the dumb ones. And like, there's only a few of us. But I appreciate you guys coming on here. We'll, you know, break it down in black and white. I've got a couple examples. So I really appreciate you guys doing it. Did you have any comments, Kish or Rommel, you guys want to mention at the beginning just about the OpenSea trait box? And again, for folks who are the physical Wonder boxes, I should say this. If you found this and you're a physical Wonders player, we are talking about the actual digital character proofs from which the characters in the physical game come from. So this might not be something, you might not be ready for this. So this is what we're focusing on, is for people who love the physical, but also the digital. So Rommel, Kish, I don't know if one of you wants to mention something about the OpenSea trait box before I bring up some examples you can talk to us about.
Sure, I'll kick us off. First of all, thanks for having us on. Our intention was to confuse the hell out of you. So good job, Rommel, we did it. No, you know, here's the thing. I think a lot of the confusion may lie in the way that kind of Web3 reads traits. You know, we didn't go into this trying to build a Web3 traded framework for our character proofs. We just wanted to go and create traits that worked with the characters we were developing. And so sometimes, just like us humans, that might mean you are just a simple, lowly explorer in the desert or whatever. And that might be the only thing you do. Your trait would be an explorer. But some people are a lot more dynamic, like you, Slappy. You might be an explorer post mage, you know? And so that just describes your character. So I would say, just as we start off, think of this more in terms of character and world development than in terms of traditional Web3 frameworks and traits as you know them in Web3.
That's great. That's a great explanation. Rommel, anything you want to add there?
So the question has come up plenty of times, and there's actually a secret answer to it that we haven't told anybody. So I'm going to hold that until the very end.
That's great. I was waiting for you to say it's one of those things like where you're going to say, like, it's called a dictionary, dude, use it. I thought you were going to name some resource that it's like, it shows how lazy or stupid or both that I am. All right. Well, the first one, this one was submitted to us by, let's see, it was submitted to us by Nate. And this one is going to be Kronar Cogmind. And let's see. And we'll go ahead and take a look. And for folks here on the call, you can see it. We're going to bring it up. You can take a look at Kronar. And then we'll go down to the important part, right? We're going to get down to the trait box. And so here I see 8. And Kish, Rama, I don't know. Let's see, Kish, this is yours. So maybe, I don't know if you want to do this one. Is that, let's see, if you'd like to see this. And can you see it all right, Kish, on your screen?
Yeah. So what specific question do we have about this one?
Okay, so we'll break it down. First of all, artists. I think that's the easiest thing. I think I speak for most of us is like, we get that. Like, we know, like, so this is your artwork. That's on. Yeah. Let me ask you one other question. Is I know that it was a compliment between you, the artist, and some AI, not to the extent people think. It's not AI driven. This was very, everyone was touched with the human hand. But let me ask you this. Were there many pieces? I don't remember you guys ever answering this before. Where you and Rama both worked on this and you had to make a decision like, ooh, well, whose name do we put as the artist? Because it was kind of 50-50.
Yeah, actually, I think there were a couple pieces where, you know, either Ramel would start or one of the other artists, or I would start with a concept, but we would look at it and say, man, that's a cool concept, but it's not quite where we want it to be yet. And so one of the artists, other artists would take over and kind of use the concept or the idea as a foundation and then further it down the road. So either they would rework it using the main idea, or they would just kind of take that idea and expand upon it.
And so how did you come up? Like, what was there any did you have any conversations when in the end you said, hey, I really want my name on this one? Or did you ever have to say that?
I don't think so. I mean, we all did so much at that point. We were just like, whatever, you know. It's I think the general rule of thumb was that if you started the concept and the idea foundation of the art piece, that then that would become your main piece. I believe. Maybe we changed it. I don't know.
There were very few pieces.
The last 4 weeks of that process were a big blur.
what was that wrong?
There were very few pieces where we actually like worked on them together, or where the person that's name appeared on the bottom of it would have been not the person who generated and did all the extra pieces. Because there were times where, like say the Phoenix Inn, I made it, but then it ran through Kishertz to decide if we were going to use it. And it went back and forth for probably like a week before we finally found the right setup. But in the end, like that was my piece. But
sure,
another one would be like some of the Helios and stuff. He started it. He got it, you know, perfect. It's in. And we looked and we're like, man, this part just needs a little editing. And maybe I'll do the editing. But it was his piece. So his name would go.
Sure. Well, and I appreciate this. I said we're going to focus just on the trait box. So I really want to keep it germane just to this, but it's funny. You can fit a lot into just the trait box. So I appreciate you guys giving me that insight to the creative process. And just a couple of bookkeeping notes for folks who, by the way, I did mention we're going to be giving away, which not to combine Wonders and Home Team Hero Fantasy, but we will be at the end giving away a box of Home Team Hero Fantasy basketball for somebody who registered for week 18. So just stay tuned at the very end. We're going to do that once we let these gentlemen go. And I also want to just let you know, it's a little bit different here in Google Meet. Just raise your hand and we'll gladly get you up on stage. We just don't want everybody talking at once. So if you have a question or a comment, please raise your hand. This is just like X Spaces. It's about the community. So we want your questions. I will say, because I'm on camera right now, I'm not checking Discord. I'm not checking text messages. I'm not checking Signal and the five other ways that people message me during the shows normally. So if you have a question, you got to raise your hand here. I'm not going to see it anywhere else. And Jen, did you have any questions about the artist box before I move on? I think, now be honest, Jen, that's the one box I had nailed.
I think I beat you because I think I had that one and maybe like two others that I'm solid on. So,
all right, well, take us, Jen. Take us to the hierarchy box then. Let us know your knowledge on it, and then why don't you ask these gentlemen what their thoughts are?
Did I say I knew about the hierarchy box?
Well, I'll let you take.
I was going with the orbital box. That one I can handle.
All right, no, let's go in order. All right, let's start in the hierarchy. But ask, so Jen, okay, when you see legendary form, so for instance, this is Nate's Wonder, and it says, okay, legendary form is 4%. So So Jen, what does that mean to you in terms of the legendary form for hierarchy? How many hierarchies are there, Jen? Are hierarchies based on each orb? And so, you know, there's 10 hierarchies in each orb. Are there different amount of hierarchies in each orb? Or is it just one hierarchy across all the orbs? And so Jen, do you know the answer to any of those questions?
You started off with me asking the questions and then you asked me questions. I know none of that. I look at it and I say, when I go and try and find things and I sort through them, that's my extent of knowledge on the legendary form. And I see it's 4%. So that looks like a decent percentage.
Well, and I think Jorzane has a primary form, right? So we have primary forms. I'm speaking correctly, right, Kish? Primary forms, legendary?
In terms of the character proofs, yes. We've modified the game cards to be primary wonders, legendary wonders, but that's mainly for gameplay.
Okay. So we have, all right, so that's a good segue. So you have primary forms here in the trait box, primary forms and legendary forms. Is there any other here of forms?
Well, we've had a lot of internal discussion about how creatures fall into that mix. And so in the gameplay, you'll now see creatures represented as secondary wonders. And that is, again, for gameplay purposes. But creatures are technically considered forms because they can attack in the game. They can they move around. They can affect by how they live in the world, the things around them.
And will, at any point, can you imagine changing the OpenSea character trait boxes to match the physical? No. And why is that? Just out of curiosity. Oh.
Provenance.
I'll disagree. I'll disagree. I'll say if the community, if you guys really want those proofs to match the trading card game, you guys go ahead and reach out and start spamming, and we'll take a listen.
Well, I think he meant start spamming Frenchie, because ultimately it's his decision.
Yes, spam Frenchie.
But you know, they listen to the community. The one thing I will say is that as it comes to the traits, you'll never move down in hierarchy. You can only move up. So you won't ever have there'll never be some time that comes where you will go and do edits on the traits or something. Because you've seen we've done some metadata updates as some of the descriptions and stuff have been updated. But you'll never go, for instance, from a legendary form down to a primary form. You may perhaps get a primary form that bumps up to legendary if we decide to do that, but never the other way around. And I just want to make sure that everyone's clear on that, that you'll never get a lower rarity tier in any updates we ever do for traits, but we're trying not to.
So to close, let's see. By the way, Galileo has one comment. He said, accurate metadata helps valuations and placing wonders in a proper category. So I'd be a fan of metadata shifting, especially if it can only go up. So Kisher, I will say you mentioned the provenance, and we know Frenchie is very big on wonders and minors. So the thinking is, right, it's not just a physical TCG. This also has to do with the first contract on proof of stake. So is the thinking not to change that, because it'd almost be like if we went back to the Lost Miners and started tweaking with that, is that the thinking is this is the last collection, this is the first collection, and they should be kind of left alone? Is that your... Not to put you in the spot of defending that position, but
it's the foundation of our world, and we don't want to be able to say that, hey, anytime we want, we can go and make updates. You may see some things evolve in terms of, you know, maybe a character now gets a new trait in the future in the game for the CCG, but that's because her story or his story has evolved through over time. But it's one of those things where, just like the CCG, no reprints ever. Because going back and reprinting and touching the data on an earlier thing or redoing it changes the valuation. And we want to make sure that you know when you buy a character proof and own one that we can't just go and be like, ah, well, you know, we feel like this today. So this character gets this and you just get, you know, wrecked. So, sure.
Okay. And so now to go back to the question I had for Jen, because she couldn't answer it, and I'll ask Rommel, is that when I see the hierarchy as legendary forms, so how many, in terms of the legendary forms, are any of the boxes, well, it's hierarchy orbital. So this hierarchy for legendary form, that appears on every character proof, or that is, like, for instance, does it appear on lands? I'm just asking on the, I apologize for not doing my homework ahead of time. Looking at land, do I see hierarchy on land?
Ramel, I was going to let you take it because I'm talking a lot.
Hierarchy, you should see land. Basically, when the hierarchy will be, it was connected to a game portion of the game card. So that's something that basically it is its designation. So if it's legendary, then it was deemed to be something that would appear less in the game. Or if it's a land, then it's a land, items or items. So that would be the hierarchy. Just like the hierarchy orbital is the same thing, but with the orbital attached to it.
Okay. And it would be, so of every wonder that's been created and released, are there any that don't have a hierarchy box?
No.
And
there shouldn't be.
And the only selections under hierarchy could be what possible answers under the hierarchy box.
I believe you have the first, which is the first has its own hierarchy. And then you have legendary forms here.
And by the way, when you say first, it says first form.
So you have the first, which is token zero.
Oh,
and then, okay. Yeah. And then there are the first forms, which may have first form in their hierarchy. I'm not sure. Then you have legendary, primary, creatures, weapons, artifacts, items, spells, and lands.
And those will all be the possible ones you can have under hierarchy.
I believe, I think that's all of them. I don't have it right in front of me.
But the legendary is split out, right? It's legendary form, legendary artifact, legendary weapon.
Correct.
I see we have a question from Galileo, but before I go there, Jen, did you have a follow-up to that?
No, that was I just wanted to make.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. Galileo, did you have a question? Possibly he did a thumbs up. I know sometimes people do that when they raise their hand.
Now,
can you hear me?
Oh yeah, now we can hear you, Galileo.
Awesome. I was looking, I think Jen was saying it too, but I was looking at OpenSea, and when you click on hierarchy, it automatically says that there's 12 categories of hierarchy. And then it starts with the hierarchy with the most wonders in it. So primary form has like 1,299 primary forms. And then it boils down to the very, you know, the hierarchy, the first, and there's only one in the first. So yeah, there you go. So when you click on hierarchy, you can see there's your entire list, right? Of hierarchy. I use that a lot, by the way.
Yes.
Yep, that's great. Thanks for reminding us to use the technology. It's hard going from a radio show to a visual show, but you're right. We can do that. So we have what you mentioned, the primary form, creature, item, land, legendary form, weapon, spell, legendary artifact, legendary weapon, to your point, Jen, first form, orbital, and the first. And you were about to make a point right before Galileo raised his hand. Did you?
Well, I was going to actually give you all, since we're on video, maybe a little insight into how these came about. And I was going to ask if you were interested in me sharing my screen and showing the actual world build that led to these hierarchies.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, it's special. So I will go ahead and share this. And this is an early document. So, you know, some names and things are obviously have not been updated. But this was a platform called Miro. And when I started building out the world, you know, looking at 5,000 tokens in a spreadsheet where we started 5,000 tokens, was pretty hard to wrap my head around how the world's going to actually look and how it was going to stay balanced. So what I did was create concentric circles outward from the first here, which you see in the middle, and the orbitals that orbit it. And then going from the center out in terms of, you know, what the characters would be. If you go from the orbitals out to your first forms and formless stones here, And then every single token in the entire collection has a place on this map.
So I love I love the zoom out, Kishore. That's great effect. Seriously, that's awesome.
So you get all of your legendary, it says primary here, but these are your legendary characters. Excuse me. Yeah, that's right. And then you have the second, which are your secondary characters, which
This is freaking awesome. Thanks for sharing, Kishore.
You're welcome. And then from there we go your creatures. And then your items, weapons, spells, and artifacts, and then your lands. And so that's literally the entire universe. And as you can see, and how some of the traits were determined, each orbital, each character is broken down. So if these are your Thalwin primary characters, you have your legendary, your merfolk, your pirates and engineers, your healers and shamans, your guardians, your Avakin leaders. In Petraea, that might look like your fairies and elf leaders and druids and herbalists. And so every single token was given a consideration, even your secondary characters here. You have your goblin tribes, your dwarf tribes, your soldiers, citizens, elementals. So, you know, everything was mapped out. Every token was placed in here and everything was considered in terms of how the universe was built out. And so not many people, you've seen Frenchie shared a screenshot of this, but since we're talking about hierarchies and traits, this was the kind of nexus of that.
Well, Rommel, anything you want to add to what Kishore's been presenting?
No, that's that was basically where we started out with a lot of it. And sometimes we would come in and there would be a section that's like, this is legendary creatures or legendary wonders. And we're like, we don't have a class here, so let's make something new, which is how we ended up with some of the more unique things.
Well, I will say, as Galileo mentioned, you know, this is incredible. He said, will this go into the lore Bible, this document?
I could put a version of it in there if Kish wants me to.
This is a little outdated in terms of, you know, how some of the languaging and stuff, but yeah, daddy. All right, Galileo, we hear you. Well, we may be able to do something. It would take some work to get it to a place where we need it to be, but you know, maybe we hear you asking. So we'll see what we can do.
All right. I do want to mention that Loco made the comment. Love how we can update metadata for lore like Legend of the Five Rings, but easy to do on chain. So just that's going back before that. I just wanted to make sure to mention Loco's comment. And I do want to just address Galileo and his comments is that I appreciate people being here. Galileo is clearly on this level when it comes to wonders with the amount of work he's done. So just a reminder, I'm glad that you could share that information to get people like Galileo excited in this talk, Kishore, because this is meant for people on the tricycles. It's not for the people on the road bikes in the Tour de France like Galileo. So I the final question I'll have, and I'm learning, Jen's not even on my level. She's already riding without training wheels. So we took a look at the, we took a look at getting back to the hierarchy and legend form. And if anyone has any further comments about the world that Kishore just shared with us, I mean, my mind, I'm like analyzing it. I'm like, oh my gosh, all the questions, everything we're going through now with these trait boxes. I was like, now it's like that GIF where the person has like, and like the boxes with the equations around his head is like, that's how I feel now, trying to take what you just gave me and incorporate it into what we're talking about here. All right, but a stupid, simple question. Appreciate Galileo saying, you know, hey, click on the hierarchy box and, you know, you can see the different ones. Are all the 12 hierarchies, I think that's the total number there is, are all 12 in every one of the orbs? Or do some only have 10 as opposed to all 12?
All 12 are present in the orbitals.
And is there a dramatic difference between them? Like in this orb, there's, you know, 100 spells. In this orb, there's 10 spells.
There are a couple of differences. And this was, some of these decisions were made prior to, you know, the CCG even being really an idea in our head. But the two orbitals that you'll notice the differences are obviously Boundless, which has quite a bit fewer number of each in that orbital, and that's because they are quite OP, overpowered in a lot of ways. There are reality benders and orbital walkers and those types of things. So you'll see a lot less of characters in that orbital. And then Thalwind, because Thalwind represents both the sea and the sky, we created that orbital in more of a duality. So it's, you know, that's why it has two formless stones and two first forms, because one is representative of the ocean and one is representative of the sky.
That's a great point to make. I will say the spells, I just have to mention, I was playing with my son, and he's so frustrated because he did so well at that public game day, and he lost to me there. He claimed I didn't know what I was doing and I did something I shouldn't have, and really I would have lost if I had played by the rules. But so we played again this past week, and again it came down to he needed one more action to beat me. And he didn't have it. And so I beat him again. And this time he doesn't have any excuses. But anyway, my point is the spells, I really started getting into the spells. And I've tried to say to the folks, like, there's a lot of people who aren't TCG people. And I've said is that it really is cool. It's not like I play Settlers of Catan or Risk. And that's like freaking, I still have a pile of, you know, Risk sitting on a coffee table that hasn't gotten finished, right? That goes months, because when are we all going to be around to get to it? But what's great about Wonders is the woman playing my son said it best. She's like, it's as simple as you want, or it's as complex as you want. And what I don't like about that saying is, I think at first blush you think, oh, if you can say it's as simple as you want it to be, how complex can it really be? But what I say to people is, I'm like, I know my 11-year-old can play it, but I'm like, I would bet you can go down to 8 years old where they can read it and they understand the points, and like, I have 5 and you have 4, and they could play this game. They will not understand, you know, going across the zones. They won't know holding on to this and just which card to play at which time and when you should be trading in your lands. Like, it is such a complex game if you want to play, if you want to win. You know, let me put it this way. If you're competitive, you will make this game very complex, because it can get complex, and that's how you win. And it really is not about if you're a TCG person. If you're a competitive person, you will love Wonders, because you 100% can beat 98% of the people out there, because they're not going to spend their time thinking through the 3D chess moves that you can make. Anyway, you said spells and you got me thinking after playing that game. Sorry, I got carried away. That's not in the trait box. Well, it is, but not, it not is. In hierarchy. Or actually, with spell it is. Okay, that's right. This one's not a spell. All right, so Jen, I think I understand hierarchy. I understand how many there are. I understand across orbs. Jen, do we have any more questions on hierarchy before we go to the orbital? And I'm assuming that's going to be an easy one. But any more questions in hierarchy, Jen?
No, that one, I think I'm good on that one.
Okay, and so Thumbs Jen... Up. Take a stab at hierarchy orbital. I'm assuming that's one of the ones you felt good about, but after what we just learned, don't you think this one's going to be a no-brainer?
Well, see, here's the thing. So there's a difference between understanding, at least from my mind, understanding how the traits in OS relate to the card somewhat, or how to put, but these things in OS, this is how you sort and this is how you find them. So when you go down to hierarchy orbital, all it's doing is helping you sort by, instead of going and picking boundless orbital and spell in the hierarchy, it's going to give you an option for boundless spell, is how I see it. I may be wrong.
Did you hear Rama?
What did you say? Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm on a roll.
All right, Kishore, I saw you looking up. Anything to add to Jen's explanation and Rommel's affirmation?
No, I'm getting some information ready in anticipation of perhaps the next place.
Okay. And so is there anything, what's really hard is, you guys as artists, I know you don't want to, you're not going to say this wonder is better, but this wonder. The other thing I want you to try to think about from our position, and see if I can get either of you to maybe mention it, is which trait boxes, when you're looking at this to see, I don't know if rarity is the right thing, but maybe like when you look at something, that's where, I mean, we all know the artist box is the most important one, right? And if it says Rama or Kish, that's the one we care about the most. But also just when you're looking at it, like Jen was just saying, the hierarchy orbital, it's really a classification. And I think it really helps you to understand which is interesting, Jen, because that might be another way we talk about, you know, people who are trying to accumulate groups. So it'd be interesting if you try to have people, and Galileo probably can answer this, have people been trying to collect hierarchy orbital? I'm not familiar with that. Have people been doing that, Jen, that you know of?
What do you mean collect hierarchy? I don't know.
In terms of a group, an entire group.
I don't know. There's so many. In the beginning, because typically when BP releases miners, wonders that I always decide a plan of attack and it's always the wrong one. And then a million people come back and they're like, oh, I did this and this is what I'm gathering. And I'm like, crap. What? So I tried with wonders. So like I sat there for like hours clicking on all the different groupings and hierarchies and trying to figure out if it was even possible to acquire all of the things in a certain bucket or a certain, you know, thing. And they're so intertwined.
Yes.
That it's very difficult to do that. So I don't know if anyone's focused on that specifically as a collector's thesis, but I know there are some out there.
Well, and I will say maybe Galileo's attempted it, but when you look at it, I mean, even the legendary weapon for the different orbs is at 17. And if they're a legendary weapon, although I will say in the beginning where people were not valuing weapons as highly as I kind of feel like they should have been, I think in the beginning you might have had a chance at that, the legendary weapon. But to your point, Jen, is that'd be kind of hard. I mean, legendary artifacts around 30, spells.
There's one in there I found that I think has like three. Has less than 10, let's put it that way. There may be one or two that had less than 10. And I kind of looked at them and who had them, and I'm like, okay, can't do that.
Okay. And you know, one question before we move on to the next one, legendary status, is that either Kish or Rommel. So when I look at the hierarchy orbital, and actually, let me back up to hierarchy. So when I look at these two trait boxes, we've talked about what the possible answers are. But what does that tell me? If I look at the hierarchy form and I see one of those 12 things, and this is very hard because you have so much depth to the wonders. But at a very basic level, when I look quickly at hierarchy and I see that answer, it's a hierarchy form. What is that telling me? That's telling me, you know, that's its place in the world. That's the type of character proof it is in the world. What is the, when you boil it down to what is the basic information, hierarchy and hierarchy orbital? And well, I guess orbital is, that's simple enough. It's with the orb attached. But what is the hierarchy telling me?
Rommel, you want to take this one?
Yeah. So it is essentially what kind of department store section are you going into? Are you going to the electronics? Are you going to automotive? Hierarchy is that. Are you getting a spell? Are you getting an item? Are you getting a creature?
That's awesome. That was exactly what I was looking for. And so let's roll right into legendary. And Jen, is this one of the two boxes that you feel comfortable being a master talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Right. It's yes or no.
You jumped on
that. It is or it isn't.
Can you explain a little bit more beyond
it? Actually, let me see. Slappy, let me turn that around. Slappy, is this one of the boxes that you understand?
Yeah, but it's... So what's really hard, I think, that I get is that here's where my confusion comes, Jen, is that when I see legendary form, like, for instance, in this example we have of Nate's, is that we have the we see hierarchy as legendary form and it says legendary. Yes. And so what I get confused about is I would think, you know, if it doesn't have legendary in the hierarchy, right, it's not going to be it. But that's, I feel like those two should be connected and they're not. Do you follow what I'm saying, Jen?
Yes, I follow you.
And do you have the same, I mean, do you understand that clearly, or is that kind of confusing for you too? Because I don't think they're linked all the time, hierarchy and legendary boxes.
I agree. And then I also have a whole issue of, I don't really quite understand the difference between the two. If there really is a significant difference.
Okay. Before you guys start, before you start, let's see, is that Galileo said, would love to understand what legendary really means to Kish and Rommel. To me, it just means more expensive. All right, go ahead, gentlemen.
That's fair. So I will talk about it in terms of what, how we kind of ideated about the difference between legendary and primary. And the way I thought about it was, when you think legendary, they're the people that everybody in the universe knows that name. You know, for instance, you know, in the human world, legendary could be Santa Claus. It could be Buddha. It could be, you know, it could be Thanos, right? It's like, it's a, they're the most known characters in that realm. Primary would be the ones around them. They are up there. They are affecting the world around them, but maybe not everybody knows them. So, you know, maybe, you know, if I asked you who the prime minister of, I don't know, Slovakia was, you know, they're an important person. They're probably a primary character in Slovakia, but hands down, you probably don't know their name. But if I asked you who the president of the United States is, almost everybody in the world would know. And so I guess there, it's kind of more so on, you know, how well are they known in the universe, and how big is their character personality within that. Ramel, did I nail that? Because it feel, I felt meandering.
I mean, you got some of it. I mean, the thing is that it's changed from when we first started.
And that's when we first,
like when we first started, the concept was that primaries were the sidekicks to the legendary creatures and legendary wonders. Legendaries were intended to be, you know, the main character, basically. That changed as we began to develop the lore in the world. And legendaries just became not necessarily more powerful, and not even necessarily more well known beyond their circles. So you take your legendary mage Chronomancer, he's probably pretty popular or well known on Heliosynth, and he's probably really well known by mages, like, you know, like a Merlin. But that wouldn't necessarily mean that he's more impactful to the universe than, say, an Abakan scout, because originally legendaries were the only ones that had real names, and the primaries all had primaries and secondaries had not necessarily like unique names.
And you did, I think you answered Galileo's question. He said in gameplay, does legendary mean more powerful? And you said not necessarily, but let me ask you this. It might not be, you know, a power 8 like my dragon. I just want to throw it out there. In the beta tech, is that most powerful card I've seen. By the way, is there, I should have gone through every card. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't, but is there anything greater than a power 8 right now? In the beta tech.
There might be. I saw what Galileo wrote. I mean, originally the hierarchy was built for lore and for delineating. I mean, legendary is more rare. If you have a legendary, you know, among anything else in the traits, because we heard it, especially when the character proofs dropped, you know, oh, what is, this is a one of one, or this trait there's only three of, or whatever. And every character is a one of one in this, right? So anything can be considered as rare as anything else. I will say, if you have a legendary, that is considered more rare. So in terms of rarity, that's the only thing I really personally consider, outside of the first forms and orbitals and such, as an indicator of rarity as it comes to how we see it on OpenSea.
Okay. And I think you answered, I don't know if you saw Galileo's comment. He said, so legendary is more about building lore across orbitals for that wonder. So the final clarification just on Rommel's point about that doesn't necessarily make them more powerful. Is there any threshold at which their power level doesn't go below? So it might not make them, you know, very powerful, but would you ever have, you know, a power two legendary?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Okay. All right. And let's see. And Loco is going crazy with the comments, and I'm not going to be able to keep up with them. But so I think we'll go on. So is there anything else? So with legendary, I think you guys nailed it. Jen, any other? You started us off beautifully, Jen. And then Rommel and Kisher took us home. Any other final things, Jen, about the legendary box?
No, I'm good. I have my yes or no. That's all I need to know.
I mean, the only thing. Oh, go ahead, Rommel.
I was going to say, I will do that thing. And I'll disagree with Kish that Legendary speaks to some of the more rare pieces, because we do have things out there like, you know, Jen picked up a Tri-Land, and it's the only Tri-Land in the set.
Yeah, mate.
So there are hidden things that make some of these quite a bit more collectible than just simply which box they have.
Rommel, I saw a picture of the mat.
It's
awesome. It's awesome.
Well, there you go.
Go ahead, Kisher. Go.
I was just going to say, the only other thing that people really need to recognize is how the hierarchy plays into the card game. And, you know, that is a lot of it is how we put cards into the set and how you build your deck. Right. So, you know, legendaries are one, primaries are two, secondaries, you can have three of in your deck. And so there are some things in terms of how we word the traits onto the cards and in the card game that are slightly different, and that's just helping mainly for the gameplay. Everything we've done for the CCG is for gameplay, and obviously the character proofs are more about the lore side of stuff.
Jen, I know you let Kisher go. Did you have a comment or a question?
I was going to ask a question, and then I kind of lost my train of thought.
Okay, well, when you're thinking about it, I'm going to share... by the way, Loco said, he said, I have some decks with commons as crucial cards. I don't know if this guy is common, but I will say in the games that I've played, I like this guy so far. And he's called Etherdino Starax. And by the way, Kish, I should ask you, will the writing I just started wearing cheater glasses 2 years ago. I will say I have a very hard time, even with my cheater glasses, reading these. Will the print be bigger on the final cards, or do I need to get a special set of cheater glasses just for the game?
Get those cheater glasses. No. We've identified a couple things on the cards. So we've went ahead and all the italicized text that you see will be slightly larger for readability. We noticed once we printed that it's a bit hard.
Okay. Great. No, that's... Hey, either way is that I just go into a bright spot of the room and I'm okay with that. All right.
I remembered my question.
Sure.
So is it safe to assume I select legendary? Yes. And I think there comes up with 678 things. If I then go hierarchy and say legendary form, legendary artifact, legendary weapon, those are all the same, right? Would I get the same results?
Can you say it one more time, Jen? I know Rommel answered.
Yeah, so when I did legendary yes or no, I selected yes. And I think there's 678. That's what pops up on OS. And then if I did that and went into hierarchy, right? And under hierarchy, there's legendary form, legendary artifact, legendary weapon. My assumption is that you would get those same 678 wonders doing it either way on. I'm just trying to relate that the hierarchy of a legendary form, all of those legendary forms are also in the legendary yes or no.
It's just another way to filter. So if you
do it. Okay.
So if you hit a yes, it'll bring up everything that's tagged with the legendary.
So in other words, Jen, I think you're asking too, if hierarchy says legendary form, can it ever say legendary box? No. Right?
Correct. In your sense, yes. Yeah.
And that could never happen, Kish. You could never have legendary no when you see hierarchy legendary form, correct?
Yeah. That would be like OpenSea breakdown if that was happening.
Okay. Galileo, I see, has a question. Galileo?
Well, I was just going to say in Jen and her example, if you clicked the legendary yes, and then you click legendary weapon, legendary artifact, and legendary form, you're not going to come up with the same number because you still have the 21 that are first forms, orbitals, and the first. So you'll have 21 different, I guess is my point.
Yeah, good delineation there.
Yes, that's special class. Yeah, Jen, you should know. How many orbs do you own again?
Oh my God.
You just can't even count.
I have two, Sloppy. One of it. Let's go.
I have three or four, I think. Yeah. All right. So moving on to lineage. All right. So, Jen, is this another one where you're an expert on it?
Okay. First of all, I'm not an expert in anything. Lineage, again, yeah. Kind of, not that I know what all of the lineages are, but obviously okay. It is, you know, they are categories, elves, dwarfs. So yes, I kind of understand how that breaks down. Not that I understand what each and all of them are, but yeah.
All right. And so Rommel is like from there. Explain lineage is that I know Kisher. I'd like, it would be great to have that screen up that Kish was sharing with us before, because I can imagine going back to that, seeing the different lineage. So is that something where when you guys started, you had a small group and it just grew and grew, or did it actually, was it big in the beginning and it shrunk and shrunk to get to the lineage? And how did you determine the 37 lineages? I guess Kisher or Rommel.
Do you want me to take this one?
Take that one.
So lineages was it's essentially, if you look at like if you're making a D&D character, it would be the race. So we started off with a handful and we did expand quite a bit. And so if something would be a race in a different game, it's a lineage in our lore.
Okay, and so when you say you expanded, originally, what did you guys start with? Do you know? I mean, you're up to 37 now.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of when we first started building that that world out that I showed you, we didn't necessarily have lineage as a trait. But what we found was that we wanted to group characters in a way that putting that information only in the class trait wasn't working for us. So we ended up building that out. So again, things like Targaryens and primates and merfolk and Fungorians.
Can you repeat that again? What wasn't working right and you added this?
So originally the lineage was part of the class trait. There was no lineage trait, right? All of that information was held under the classes.
Under, when you say class trait, the orbital class trait box. Okay,
right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Or universal, right? And so we just found, and a lot of those class traits were doubled up. So you'd have like two or three words under that trait. And it was just not working for us in terms of how we wanted to transpose it into gameplay and how we wanted to break some of these things out. So we made it so that it just didn't have, we just broke it out into its own trait and we created the lineages, because merfolk is an entire lineage of characters and so on and so forth.
Rommel. We originally only had just class. And so the lineage, universal, orbital, a lot of that was all just in one box.
And Rommel, what was the one class that was left on the cutting room floor that you're mad about, that you wish was brought in, that was kept?
Everything made it.
Yeah, sure.
I want to it.
Kish, there wasn't one for you?
I mean, you won't see any humans yet.
Yet?
Well, yet.
No, you know, listen, we had so many characters to make that it was like, we needed more, to be honest. And I don't think any didn't make the cut.
Okay. All right. That's great to hear. All right. And then, So when we look at this, Kish, I asked Rommel last time. And so when we look at lineage, is that Rommel, you kind of explained it from a TCG, like Dungeons and Dragons perspective, but for a non-TCG person, when I look at that lineage, what am I thinking when I'm looking at that box? If I go and somebody shares something with me and I click on that lineage, what should I be thinking and looking for when I click on that lineage beyond just defining it?
He did ask Rommel, right?
I went back to Rommel answering it, to be fair, and I referenced him, but he answered the last one. But Rommel, we'll go to you.
The lineage without like defining, like from a game perspective, from just a real world perspective, it's Japanese, Americans, Europeans.
But it, I think one of the things, and this could just be a description, I mean, I guess I look at it this way. If there's eight spots that are on here, it's like they're important information that you're trying to convey to the person who looks at this, right? And this is not TCG, as you've established, like it doesn't necessarily correlate even to the physical game. So this data that's here, right? Why was this important? So with the lineage, it's like you can say the different lineage and you're defining it when you say Japanese Americans, European Americans, but why... why should I care? Why should I care if, you know, the difference between a Japanese American and a European American in this collection?
Different. The stories are different. The backgrounds are different. The people they meet are different. Where they travel is different. All of that creates and gives you data points in terms of how you tell the lore of your character. So a merfolk is going to tell a fundamentally different story than an elf.
That is great. That actually, Jen, that really makes it clear to me. Like, so when I'm looking at this, now I'm looking at lineage and I'm thinking, what kind of story, like, I had for lineage? You could see I just clicked on, I think I did the pixies. And just looking at these is that I'm thinking about, I mean, the story I'd create, right, for them. And so that's interesting, Jen, because now when I look at lineage, that's what I'm thinking in terms of what is the team, what have they already released, and what will they release for that? Yeah, I mean, Jen, did you have any?
My thing was there are some in here where I would assume lineage, right? Similar to when Rommel was saying Japanese, American, whatever, that it's more focused on characters or what we would say is people, right? But when I look in some of these, there are objects that are in here too. Which I get, because right, it was this hammer or this sword was created in, I think I was in elves, you know. So with the elfin liturgy, someone must have created this thing way back when, and it has, you know, special powers or whatever it does for the elf people. So that kind of stuff. So it's more than just.
In terms of that, lineage also, again, it ties all back to the game. So example would be an elf warhammer. If there's something that connects with elves, it'll connect with that warhammer in the game. But also, from a lore perspective, that warhammer came from the elves. So it would have some tie to their story.
What Jen was saying is accurate, right? So basically the lineage is from the elves because that is part of their story.
Yeah, and that's a great, Jen, thanks for bringing up that point about it's more than just forms. It's also things like weapons. And by the way, Milvek had the comment, there are some lineages that should be human, but they're the animal. Axon is one, shared that comment. And I think we'll go to, I appreciate the time you guys have put into this. Like, we'll go through here. I don't want to rush it because this is important. You guys have been great educating us. I appreciate your time. Did not expect to spend an hour on such a simple subject. I appreciate you educating me. And Orbital, Jen, I'm going to turn this over to you because I think you can probably handle Orbital. Maybe not. Like, these guys are going to they're going to surprise me. But Jen, do you want to explain the Orbital box?
I feel like an idiot because I feel like I'm going to explain it and then Rommel's going to get on there. Well, you know, really, it's a.
Well, he did say you nailed it on that one time.
That one. What I got.
I think this one you can.
The orbitals, I think so. The orbitals are obviously there's seven, the first being one, and then you have the six boundless Umberthane, Heliosynth, Selphera, Tailwind, and Petraea. And so when you click on those, you get everything that's created from that world, that orbital.
Okay, and
that's
my
definition.
And I think it speaks for itself, right? It's that people are clearly attracted to Boundless, or they're attracted to Petraeus, or however TechSuper says it, Petretulus. And is anything you guys, Kish, you want to add about orbital, or that pretty much sum it up?
I don't know what hasn't been said about orbital. Okay. I think that sums it up for now.
Okay. And so, orbital. Sorry, Rommel. Go ahead. Yeah. Add.
Nailed it. We're good.
Yes, two.
All right. Now this one is Jen. This one I feel like I know a little bit more since they were talking, Kish was talking about lineage, but Orbital Class, I will admit coming into this very confused about it, still not completely sure. Jen, how are you feeling about it?
I'm slightly confused because I'm going back to Kish's comments of there was no lineage, it was class. So I'm thinking it's maybe a holdover from that. Some of them make sense because they have the lands broken out by the orbital and spells and other things like that. But then there's ones that are just by themselves. And okay. So that confuses me.
And it seems like Rommel's chomping at the bit to get that. And by the way, I will say to piggyback on your thoughts about that, I see the lands and they're listed as their own orbital class. Are all Thalewind lands listed here, or are there possibly other Thalewind lands that are not listed under the Thalewind land? I assume not. But all right, sorry, go ahead, Rommel. Answer it all. Jen's thoughts, my question.
Right. So to hit Milvik's comment about lineage real fast. Lineage for that particular one is a Tigerian, which means that they have some historical bloodline to the Tigerians. Just because it looks like a human doesn't mean that it is a human. That's one thing you got to remember, is this is a world of fantasy and magic. Just because it looks like something doesn't mean it is. As far as the orbital and universal class, Chris, should I just let them in on the secret? Or do you want to do it?
You started this whole thing off with, I got a big secret to tell. So who am I to steal your limelight and thunder?
So the whole thing about the universal class and the orbital class is they are in a way tied. When we broke them apart, we started looking at the different ways to set things up. And the universal class is what the class would be if they were in any universe, whether it's ours or Star Wars or whatever. It's like if that creature or that thing were in another universe, it would be whatever that universal class is.
Captain is a good example, right?
Exactly. Perfect. Captain is a great example because your leadership primary, you do things that a captain would do. The next step with that is the orbital, which is the qualifier. So that'll be what you're known for or what you're most connected to in this world. So example would be airship. So if you're an airship captain, chances are you pilot an airship, but airship captain might not be in another universe.
So what basically in this, you know, the universal class is a large net, and that we cast out, and the orbital class basically is the adjective that gives it a more specificity. So you can be a mage. Well, what kind of mage? Well, if you look at the orbital class, maybe you are a chronomancer mage. Does that make
you?
Yeah,
which means you may have some connection to time because, you know, chrono.
Again, I'm going to let you. I've been asking all the dumb questions.
I'm like sitting here, I'm like clicking on different things, trying to make it click in my head.
Yeah, actually, you want to know something? I don't know if Kish or Rommel, if you guys want to share your screen for everyone. I will say, it's not completely clicking for me right now. I'm getting parts of it, but I don't fully understand. Sorry, Rommel.
Oh, no problem.
I get the universal class. Okay. I don't understand. I don't then know how that.
So take, we'll go with captain again, right? So we got captain universal, then we have pirate, right? And okay,
hold on. Where are you in? Are you talking universal class now?
We're going to talk orbital, right? So captain is a universal, right? We can use the one that's on screen right now. It's mage and chronomancer, right?
Correct.
I gotta blow it up. Yep. Okay.
So if you're looking at that, the orbital class is chronomancer. So that means that he has a connection to, or in this universe, the universe of the Wonders of the First, he would be known as a chronomancer because of the way he bends time or uses time. But he's just, if it were a D&D character, you would make him as a mage.
Okay.
So in essence, look at, you could, if you want to go that route, you can look at it as, if we were to do, I don't know, like a D&D supplement for Wonders of the First or a Pathfinder supplement.
Hold on, Alpha. Alpha alert.
Universal could be or would be the class you choose, and then Orbital would be the package of skills you choose to go with it.
So this is, you're translating this for the rest of the world outside the Wonder, so they understand what this character means.
It helps us to take it to that next level, yeah. So if we choose to do something beyond just what we are, we can do more things.
Is it both that and other people will understand? So for instance, somebody in Dungeons and Dragons would look at this, they'd see the universal class, and it'd be easier for them to understand what this is? So it's both, so you can build. So in terms of the building, is that, well, I won't get that. It's like I said, I wasn't going to ask you guys to go squirrel off too much. Is that...
Well, and I just, you know, again, here might be a little easier, right? Every one of the smaller circles can be a mage. So you have mage as your universal. And then any one of those could be something that describes what kind of a mage it is. And that would be your orbital class, right? So you can be a mage, but there's all these different kinds of mages. You could be a hero mage, a druid mage, a goblin mage, an elf mage. And so it's just, it's helping you to identify, like, what kind of mage are you? And, you know, you can have mages on all the orbitals, but a mage from Petraea may be of a specific class, which could be a druid or an elf or those are lineages. So I'm fucking that up. But
go ahead, Romo.
It also translates, I know this is going to be a question that someone's going to ask you, but as far as how it translates into gameplay, sometimes it's as simple as, I think you guys had another example, a vampire guy, and he's a diplomat, a noble diplomat. In gameplay, for a vampire, he would take something and gain something. But maybe because it's, when we look at it and we see noble diplomat, we do that by making it negotiation. You give them a choice of something to do versus a berserker who would just take it. So we use the traits to help flavor the abilities that we're going to create.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great, Rommel. That was a great explanation. Jen, did you have any? I think I understand enough to really understand orbital class and universal class. I definitely am going to think more about everything you guys have been saying. No, I mean, but I do feel like I understand it. Jen, you kind of feel the same way, or any clarifying questions you have?
No, I'm much better now, but Kisher, so are you saying, so if I'm going under the orbital classes in your little circle there, are each of the little bubbles only assigned to one orbital, or could those little bubbles go to 2, 3, 4, 5?
In the original way that we had envisioned it, it was only to go to one orbital. And that would have probably made things a lot cleaner if the universal class could be on any orbital, and then the orbital class was specific to an orbital. That's changed. So you might find some crossovers, but generally speaking, you're accurate to that. So okay. Fire mage would generally only show up in Sylphera.
Okay, got it.
And let's see, Milvek said, why don't all have both? And so I think he's talking about the orbital class and universal class. And that is, we were kind of hitting them up above, but I did notice, right, there's not the same amount of trait boxes for all. So I guess the question, and I assume Milvek, that's what you're talking about. When you're posting questions, folks, if you could just put a little more detail, because as the conversation carries on, we're not sure like which part you might be referencing, but I think that's it. So Rommel, Kish, in terms of the trait boxes, which ones are not universal for every character proof? And I assume he's talking about orbital class and universal class.
I mean, you may have a character that's just a fighter. and that'd be their universal class. And maybe they're not any specific kind of fighter. They're just a fighter, or they're, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it could just be that that character, you know, doesn't need it.
Yep. Okay. So you kept it generalized. I don't want to say generalized because there was thought that put in, but it's generalized enough. It crosses over universes or throughout the universe, I guess I should say, the proper way.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. I think, and you answered his question. He was talking about fighters. All right. Well, Jen, I think that's it. We had a couple other examples. I don't think we need to go through them to see those as well. Jen, did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask these gentlemen? I'll pull up the couple of other ones as well, just to see if there's anything I note in the trait box that I might want to ask them. But did you have any questions?
So my only question was, when you click on, when you're searching through different ones, obviously some have more, and I think we were talking about this in the beginning, some have more trait boxes than others. So after going through this, I'm assuming that one box that may be missing or in other ones would be the orbital class. Everything else should be in a...
So a lot of the things that come up missing for some of these is like, it's going to be an artist. You're going to have the hierarchy. You're going to have hierarchy, orbital, all that'll be there. But when you get to universal, everything should have a universal class. If it doesn't, it's something.
Fine, Rob. If it doesn't, fine, Rob.
But everything should have a universal. Not everything has an orbital, although most of them do. And then not everything has a lineage. A lot of things could have had a lineage. And if you guys spam Frenchie, I'll take the lore that you guys all want, and I'll tie it all together. But you got to spam Frenchie.
He's going to hate you.
But if you take like a human on Petraea, they're a Petraean. That's part of the lore that we didn't necessarily attach, so we didn't throw too many boxes out there for you guys. Because the question is, you know, is a Targaryen from Petraea also a Petraean? So we didn't do that, although we could. If it's missing a box, it's missing it from lineage or orbital, most likely.
And that's orbital class, just to be
orbital class.
Yeah.
All right, and I'm not sure if you saw the question from Milvek, who said, when do we find out faction history or relationships, e.g. Avian Claw and Iron Plume?
Rommel is working on that.
Okay.
You will have that soon.
We got a lot in the process, but, you know, one of the things we decided as a team is, you know, again, this is... we've spent over a year and a half now thinking about all this, and a lot of it's been iterated upon and changed and updated. And so it can be confusing, especially because, you know, a lot of times it started somewhere and then ended somewhere else. But, you know, for instance, for the game, we didn't want to introduce too much too fast. And so, you know, when we find out more about faction history or relationships, the lore for that is coming. You'll specifically know that, you know, you'll see some of those factions on the game cards, but there may not be any abilities that get to utilize them yet. And so we did want to make sure, like, one of the things that makes our game different is that there's multiple ways to have your cards interact on the game board, and factions will eventually be one of those ways.
Oh, cool. I just want to hit a couple that we had so we can take a look at them. I won't quiz Jen, but here we have the High Priestess Kelani Mosshart. And what's interesting here is there's no lineage, right? That's why we're only seeing seven boxes. We do have the orbital class and the universal class. And what's interesting is the priest, which I can see that going across the universe, but religious fanatic. That's the first time I've seen that. So there is a religious fanatic or orbital class you created. But does anything... stick out to you guys here other than this kind of going with what we were talking about? It, I mean, again, priest, that sticks out to me. I kind of understand that based on how Rommel, you and Kisher explained that. And then again, just no lineage there.
I would say the only thing that sticks out here is this is one of those examples where the orbital class does extend into other orbitals. So you will see some religious fanatics across different orbitals. And that's one of those kind of outliers.
Okay, cool. And then let's see, let's check one other one, which is one of the listeners submitted Hatem Erlington. And so here we're looking and we have the nine. So faction, you know, what's interesting, and this kind of just a stupid point, maybe it's an open sea thing, but why is, we didn't have a faction before. So, because you're kind of looking close at it. Is there something wrong with it, or you're just trying to read it?
I'm trying to read it. I have a couple windows open.
Yeah.
So it's not very big.
Okay. And so, Jen, we didn't talk about faction before, right? We talked about lineage, but we didn't talk about faction, did we? I don't think we did.
No, we may not have.
Okay, so faction, and so here's a good question with the faction and the lineage. So Jen, to me, lineage, right? That's where you come from, kind of like your line. And then the faction is who you choose to be. It's kind of your, one's your association by birth and the other one's your association by choice. That's kind of how I take it, Jen.
Great way to look at it.
Yeah, I was going to say that would be my, my thought process as well.
And anything, Kish or Rommel, to add to a faction that we want to see? And is there anything in this trait box that stands out to you? I mean, anything, I think you've covered it really well, but anything you want to say about faction or this trait box?
I'm excited for the factions. That's what I'll say. It was something that I fought hard to keep in, especially for the game. It's a rich design space. I think it adds an incredible bit of flavor to what you can do with the lore and how you can collect the cards and the character proofs. And I think once the gameplay for some of those factions come out, our game's going to really allow for some really rich gameplay and deck building.
Rommel, you were laughing. Is there anything you want to add about factions?
So factions are...
Yeah, and by the Rommel, I have to interrupt you and just say one thing. Is Kisher... You are the Frenchie of Wonders, and Rommel, you're the Eric S. of Wonders, which is, you're just like, I'm not going to say it because I'm not sure if I should, I'm not sure. And like, Eric loves to give us alpha, like, which is great. And Rommel, you love giving Wonders alpha. So go ahead.
Factions are a huge lore space. So currently there are a bunch of factions. There's a couple others that we hadn't really detailed and we didn't put on proofs. And then there's some that are on proofs that only have, you know, one or two people, but that doesn't mean that their faction is any less important, to storytelling or any more important. It's just that some of those factions have far reaching ramifications across their orbit.
Great. Jen, any questions about factions?
No, I don't have any questions. I do have a comment on, I think I found like the award I would give to like the best name of a wonder.
Oh, I hope it's the one I'm thinking of. Please tell me.
Would her name be Ella?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Which one are you talking about? Ella?
Share your screen, Jen. I mean, that's the beauty
of
it.
No, I don't have her up. I'm looking at a spreadsheet.
Okay. Okay.
Because she's a vampire.
She does amazing things when you put her in the game.
She's a procurer of meat sacks.
I hate playing against her in the starter deck.
Oh, that killed me yesterday.
I thought you were going to say Zip Zip Nug Nug.
That was another one. That was like the runner up to Ella. That was a good one too. I'm like, what?
All right. Well,
Happy, just to your, and I want to remind everyone, you know, we only have 4,208 proofs that were revealed. There's 10,000 total possibilities in that first contract. So just because a faction only has one or two today doesn't mean that there isn't more of that faction in the universe. Maybe just they haven't been revealed yet.
I love that somebody's got a faction where there's like two in it and they're like, yes, I've got two. And then the next 5,892 are all going to be that faction and they'll have one out of 5,893. That's a great point, Kish. I will say, this is off topic, but I'll throw it out there, is that Cloud said, off topic, when will the physical box cover art reveal?
Soon. You know, we all know it's going to be by the end of March, because we have said that no matter what, that those will reveal in Q1. So you can guarantee that before March 31st. Now there's talks to do that sooner. I haven't been given an approval to give you an earlier date specifically. I am not the Tom Holland of the Wonders of the Purge. You know, if anything, Ramal is the Tom Holland MCU. if you catch the reference, he's the guy that always spills the beans in the MCU.
Yes, for those of us who are MCU fans, definitely get it.
I'm assuming everyone here is, you know, a big geek at heart, like I am, so they'll understand the reference.
All right, well, and I will say, we're going to do final questions from Jen, and any final comments from Kishore and Rommel, but before we do that, I will say is that we're going to go ahead, and I will just give this off. It's Rommel, Kish, I appreciate you guys being here as long as you have. I'm going to go ahead and just give this away, see if we've got it. Is I'll share the screen quick. It's nice to actually be on video. We can do this. And let's see, the dice roller, and we'll do it once. Roll the dice. We're going to do it six times. I hate when it goes all the way at the. It's just, I was explaining this whole thing to my son today. Somebody said to me, like, well, you really got to roll the dice to determine how many times you randomize the list. And I'm like, yeah, but if you take it that far, shouldn't you roll the dice to determine how many times you're going to roll the dice? And then you can take it back another step. Like, it you have to keep going back if you're going to do it. If you're not going to have a random list and just click it once, then you got to go back like one of those Escher drawings that just goes on forever. All right. Well, anyway, here we go. Here goes. What's that, Kish?
True randomization is really hard to accomplish.
That's a great point. Yeah, all right.
I will tell you that.
Yeah, so there's four, there's five, and there's six, and it's Dublin. And Dublin, if you're in here, raise your hand. And if Dublin's in here, I'm going to do it one more time. He gets it if he's in here, because I know not many people are still here. Bond Guy, if you're in here, you're next. And Nick W., if you're in here, you're next. And De Leon, you're next. And Skull, you're the next one. Bond Guy again. Dublin again. GI on it. Oh, thanks, guys. Bond Guy again. Oh, my gosh, it loves it. George Zane, who already won something today. Paxman, who I did see was in here earlier. And actually, is he still in here? Oh, Mike is. All right. Paxman is in here. He won that. Okay. I will stop sharing that. So
we got there in the end, baby.
I know. Jen, any final questions or comments you had?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you guys so much. It was very informative. I learned a heck of a lot. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Jen. Thanks for joining us, especially after that show. And again, you've been going on 2.5 hours. I know you've had a busy day, Jen. Thanks for being here. Rommel, any more alpha you want to share with us?
No, I think I'm good for the day. I'm going to go work on some lore.
I love it. He's good for the day, folks. If he's just going to have more tomorrow and the next day and the day after. Awesome. Thank you so much, Rommel, for your time. All right. And Kish, we'll hand it over to you.
Thanks for bearing with us today. You know, the traits over the last year and a half have evolved and been iterated upon. And so even to me, it can feel sometimes a little convoluted. But you know, we're trying to get it to a place where it makes sense for both the lore and for the game. And it's been a challenge integrating those at times, but I think we've gotten to a really good place. And hopefully what we gave you all today is gives you a little better understanding of where we were coming from, not so much in terms of rarity, but in terms of what we want to build. And we're hoping that all of those traits have given you the tools and the backgrounds whatever you might need to expand on the stories of each of your characters. And at the end of the day, that's really what we wanted to do, was give each character proof a setting, place in a place in our universe, so that you can take it and run with it for the lore on a larger scale. So I hope we've done that for you. And we look forward to the stories and the lore that you guys create with what we've given you and your character proofs.
Well, thank you, Kish. And I'm reminded once again of that player at the public beta test who said this can be as simple or as complex and depth, have as much depth as you want. And I think the same can be said about the collection, right? You can look at it and just appreciate the beauty. You can look at it and just appreciate something about it. Or to the what you've done with us here today, explain the depth to each character and how deep you want to go. So I appreciate you for you and Rommel with arming us with that knowledge. And that's it for BPX After Dark Daytime Extra. We hope you found this chat informative. We can't thank Kishore and Rommel enough for taking the time to talk with us and educate us. Thank you, the viewer, especially for listening. And everyone, have a great day.
Thank you, Slappy. Engine.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
See you later.
You've been listening to BPX After Dark, Daytime Extra, broadcast live at Radish Digital. That's digital with a J. Thank you for tuning into our show. A special thanks to those in the audience who raised their hand, commented during the broadcast, or came on stage, helping to make BlockPax the best community. BlockPax is a community built by collectors and players for collectors and players. That's it for this broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.